Between the Lines with Andrea Gilligan. This is News Talk.
Coming up on this morning's programme, we'll be discussing the place of religion in Irish schools. We'll be joined by an expert panel to discuss the models of patronage, school admissions and the so-called baptism barrier. My panel today, John Walsh, lecturer in higher education and education policy at Trinity College Dublin and a member of the Dublin and Dunleary Education and Training Board, Sandra Irwin-Garran, Educate Together Education and Support Programme Manager, and also David Quinn from the Iona Institute and columnist with the Sunday Times. You're all very welcome to the programme.
Good morning.
Thanks, Andrew.
Good morning.
It's now February 2018. Our society has changed dramatically. We've more people practicing different religions and none. And just maybe to give us a kind of a quick overview of what's out there for the next generation of students today in Ireland. John Walsh, what's available in Ireland today?
Well, Andrea, there's a number of options available in terms of different patrons. I suppose there's the most numerous and traditionally the most dominant within the system are the Catholic National School, There's also the Educate Together, multi-denominational schools. There's community national schools under the oversight of the Education and Training Boards, which are a small but growing element within the system, which are state-provided but are intended to be multi-faith, catering for all religions. And there's also the Gael Scoileanna at both primary and post-primary level. I suppose it's worth saying that while there's been quite a lot of change in terms of, say, from 20 or 25 years ago, there's been quite a lot of institutional change in terms of options offered to parents. The level of choice depends hugely on where you live. Like in parts of Dublin, parents are quite well provided for in terms of being able to consider where they'd send their children to school. In rural areas, often the choice might be a lot more restricted.
Okay. So what you're saying at the moment is, if I'm a parent listening to this now, maybe with a newborn baby, Sunday morning in Dublin, I have a plethora of schools to choose from to send my new child to. If I'm living in Donegal, maybe parts of rural Sligo, Leitrim, Longford, Roscommon, those options may not exist. I might just have the local primary school, which may happen to be a Catholic school.
That's right. Yeah, there could be. There's a dramatic variation in terms of the variety of schools and the variety of school types that's available in different parts of the country. And of course, the local primary school may be a very good school, and parents may be very happy to send their children to it. But we do have to take account of cultural and societal diversity. I mean, Irish society has changed dramatically over the last 20, 25 years, is still changing.
Yeah.
And that has kind of put, I suppose, religion at the forefront of public debate, both at primary and post-primary.
Can I just maybe bring you in, Sandra, on that point, that as John touched on, and I suppose we only have to look at kind of the latest census figures of late from the Central Statistics Office to see that there's more and more people in Ireland that are practising different religions and many practice no religion at all. So there is a need and a demand and sometimes a want and a desire for something maybe a little bit different out there.
There is, and just to, I suppose, to come back on something that John said about, you know, that there being, if you live in Dublin, there's lots of schools for you to choose from. The reality that many families find themselves in, yes, there may be different types of models of schools within a couple of miles of where they live, but many of those schools are highly oversubscribed, so they find it very difficult to even get into the schools, because when you look at the breakdown of the types of schools, they're heavily dominated by church-managed schools in Ireland.
And so that's even in Dublin?
That's even in the larger urban areas.
Yeah, we look at Dublin as kind of being, I suppose, the model for all of this, where effectively you have that level of choice out there.
Absolutely. And I mean, there are pockets, for example, Lucan. There are 5 Educate Together schools in the area of Lucan. So that's a pocket of, you know, a well kind of resourced diversity of provision. But like, there are about 25,000 children who attend Educate Together schools in we have 81 primary schools and we have 9 second level schools with a further 4 opening next September. But we also have about 25,000 families on our waiting list. So an equivalent number waiting to get in that have places in Educate Together schools. And there is huge demand for, you know, a diversity of provision in Ireland. And like, we would certainly be for providing for choice and greater amount of choice for parents. There are many of our parents who are Catholic or who are of various different denominations. There are many of our parents who have no denomination. So therefore, we have rebranded as equality-based schools as opposed to multi-denominational schools to take account of those people in our school communities who don't have religious affiliation.
Because in some cases you have parents who might be one or either religion, or perhaps maybe it might be that, you know, the parents might be two different religions, but they might just want their child to grow up or to go to a school that isn't denominated in any one way, really.
Yeah, and I think it's very interesting to look back at the history of Educate Together. Educate Together first started, and it is a not-for-profit organisation that basically we try and provide greater choice to Irish families. And its origins were in, rooted in the Troubles in Northern Ireland, and a group of parents out in Dalkey wanted their children not to be separated along faith lines. And that's where the origins came. So that's where we are still at today. Okay. So 40 years later, we're 90 schools in, and you can see that, you know, things change, particularly in Irish education.
Yeah, and obviously that level of growth you talk about, 90 schools across the country reflects the level of demand as well, obviously, that's out
there. Some of the demand, yeah.
Okay. David Quinn from the Ione Institute. As it stands at the moment, to get into a Catholic primary school, obviously children have to be baptised and christened, but in rural areas...
Well, they have to be in the event of overcrowding.
Just in the event of overcrowding.
Yeah.
In rural areas, though, that can often be, I don't want to say necessarily an issue, but that level of choice maybe sometimes, as we talked about, as John mentioned at the outset, in parts of the country and outside of the urban regional areas, that level of choice isn't there. And sometimes parents don't have a choice as to where they're going to send their schools.
I've been writing a column now for 24 years. And in all that time, I've been arguing that there are too many Catholic schools in the country for the type of society we are becoming. And this is from 24 years ago, when we were a lot less ethnically and religiously diverse than we are now. Because it's clear that the 90% plus of primary schools that are run by the churches, mainly the Catholic Church, is an historical hangover, which needs to change. Because I start off on the principle all the time in these debates that parents are the primary educators of their children, and the school system must by and large be a response to what parents want. And if parents want there to be a wider range and diversity of choices for their children to be educated in, then that must be met. Mm-hmm. So if that means over time that the number of Catholic schools in the country drops by half, then so be it. Now, the Department of Education under Rory Quinn, this is maybe towards the end of 2011, ran a survey around the country. I think it involved parents in about 300 different schools and found demand maybe for about 10% of schools being divested. So it turns out that when you actually ask parents concretely, would you use a different type of school to a Catholic school? Most say no. They're quite happy with the school they've got. That's not to say there's no argument for some divestment.
And there's often been even more recent surveys as well that have actually published similar enough findings. Just in your own opinion, why is that?
I think people tend to be pretty... If their child is happy in the local school, they tend to be happy with the local school no matter what it is, actually. And so it takes a lot to kind of jolt them out of the status quo. There has to be some deep-rooted dissatisfaction with their school or with their child's experience in the school, I think. So I think if the school system had been, we'd say, secular all these years, and they were happy to have their child in the local secular school, and their child is happy in the local secular school, I think they'd be happy with that system too, to be honest. I don't think it shows a particularly deep-seated commitment to Catholic education, but by the same token, it doesn't show a particularly deep-seated antipathy to Catholic education either. If their child is happy in the local school, they tend to be happy with the local school.
Okay, but the idea that for many people living in rural areas where they don't have the other options, they maybe don't have a local Gael school, or they don't have a community school or an Educate Together school, perhaps the only option, not that there's anything wrong with it, but the only option might be a Catholic-run primary school, or perhaps a primary school of other minority faith. Can't get into that school, say, right?
Well, I mean, that's if it's overcrowded. But even if it's not overcrowded, I mean, most schools in the country are not overcrowded, and most schools has enough places for demand. But it might still be a case that, okay, I can easily get my child into the local Catholic school, but I don't want my child to go to a Catholic school. I want my child to go to a different type of school, and those parents have to be listened to. So, again, over time, as divestment takes place, at whatever pace and in whatever quantity, it could be a case that the school closest to you is no longer a Catholic school, and you've got to go 5 miles up the road to find a Catholic school, or vice versa. And I think that's going to be unavoidable. And I look for the day when it actually does happen, that in your area, in a 5-mile radius, you will have some meaningful school choice.
Mm-hmm. Can I just ask you, John Mulch, just to maybe to respond to some of the points raised there by David Quinn?
Sure. Just taking up the point David was making about, I suppose, Rory Quinn's statements in 2011, 2012, I think they were made in the context of the forum on patronage, which recommended, I thought, had a very useful roadmap for change within the educational system. And it recommended incremental change, which makes a lot of sense because you want change to happen on a gradual basis so that parents can plan properly for their children's future. And that it recommended that as in a kind of first stage of change over a number of years, that approximately 250 or 258 Catholic national schools could be divested and could be moved either to a state patronage, such as the ETB, or to...
Which is about 8% of the total, maybe?
It's relatively small. Yeah. Now, it was intended as the first stage of change. But in saying that, the actual progress made was nothing like that. The actual progress made, certainly up to very recently, was less than 5. Was less than 5
and
schools.
Some of them are Church of Ireland, isn't that right?
I was Catholic. Yeah, Catholic there's a slightly larger if you take into account Church of Ireland. But still, I mean, less than a dozen schools have been divested throughout the country.
There's often local resistance when they actually say, my school is going to be changed.
That may well be true. But I think it does show, in a sense, that if the forum roadmap is to be taken seriously and not left gathering dust on a shelf in the department, I would like to see the minister in the department taking the forum report seriously and implementing it in consultation with local communities and not in any sort of aggressive way. Mm-hmm. But I mean, certainly there is a sense, and just again goes back to what both David. What David was saying a minute ago, there is a sense that the structure of the system and the patronage structure of the system have really lagged behind cultural and demographic change.
Can I just bring you in, Sandra Garrant, from Educate Together on that?
Yeah, just, I suppose, to come back around the 2011 divestment plan, there was about 42 or 43 areas surveyed, and of those, about 28 of them were areas that were, the surveys came back, that there was a demand for change. And Educate Together were, I suppose, given the imprimatur to develop schools in 25 of those 28 areas.
Okay.
Now, out of that, only 8 schools have opened 7 years later.
Why is that?
Your guess is as good as
but
mine.
But does it come back to that point that David raised a few moments ago, David Quinn?
No, it doesn't,
about
because
the demand, resistance to change.
No, the demand was there in 28 areas. In 25 of those 28 areas, the demand was there for an Educate Together school. And yet only, I think it's 8 Educate Together schools and 2 other schools. One is a community national school and one is under the Gaelscoil model. So the demand is there, but the pace of change, it has been extremely frustratatingly slow. And it's not even as easy as for the current government to say, this was in a previous administration. Mm-hmm. Our current action plan on education has figures of 400 multi-denominational, non-denominational schools in the system by 2030. Now, that's 12 years' time. It has taken Educate Together 40 years to get to 90. So, we really need to see much more progress and much more resources put behind those aspirational targets in our current action plan.
Actually,
and
what you need,
program.
I mean, I think what you need above
David
all is a lot of... community push behind it. So I think it was a school, I think it was in Finglas, and it was a Catholic school earmarked for divestment, and there was a lot of local resistance to it. Now, I have no doubt in Finglas there would be demand for an Educate Together school, and yet when they actually earmarked a particular school, I don't know who they were going to hand it over to, I can't remember, there was lots of local resistance that the politicians joined in with because they went with the crowd. So I think in those kind of areas, in whatever part of the country, where a school is earmarked for divestment, you have to have leadership from the local church and the local bishop and the local community leaders, and from local politicians. You've got to get a lot of shoulders to the wheel to say, actually, you know what, we have 5 schools in this area and one should be Educate Together, or ETB, or whatever the case may be. But it takes leadership, and it takes leadership not just from the churches, but it takes leadership, as I say, from community people and also from the local politicians.
Sandra, do you want Stephen to respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it takes collective leadership. I mean, as I said before, Educate Together is a not-for-profit organisation. We're not the state. So it is the state's role, really, to provide for these choice of provision. And even with, say, the schools that I mentioned earlier that were opened or in the divestment process, 5 of those schools have recently got directives from the Department of Education to limit the number of their junior infant class next September. So whilst all of those schools, they could have opened, they could have taken in a full class and more of junior infants next September, they have been instructed by the Department of Education to limit their enrolment to 13 children. And I mean, to the listener listening this morning, they might say, oh God, I'd love my child to go to a class with 13 children. But that's not what a half a stream class looks like. A half stream class is basically junior and senior infants in the same class.
Yeah, it's the shared, basically, with a shared resource.
And there has been huge demand and campaigns and just shock from these communities.
Yeah. And those campaigns are still underway, actually, even
absolutely. We're desperately trying to get the department to review that decision. Those schools really rightly feel that they are being discriminated against, because the letter has said the rationale is that their enrolment is capped because they don't want to impact on the enrolment of other schools in the locality.
I was actually just looking at that letter during the week as well. Just John Walsh is a lecturer in higher education and education policy at Trinity College Dublin. Just what do you say? what's your response to that?
It makes no sense at all for the department to be limiting enrolment, particularly as there's no educational case for them to do so. It makes no case to cap enrolment in certain cases. I mean, there's a wider debate about whether small schools are actually advantageous to students, and there's different research on that, and there's a resource issue.
Well.
But certainly that makes no sense.
Yeah. Before we take a break, David Quinn, if I can just even ask you to respond, as Sandra pointed out, that I suppose letter, if you like, that was issued to Educate Together schools regarding the capping at enrolment. Just what do you say to that?
It doesn't make sense to me on the surface. I mean, it's not an issue I've studied, in any particular depth why exactly that decision was made. Is it local schools just don't want competition and they don't want to be drained of some of their pupils? I presume it's something like that. But again, parents would have the right to send their children to whatever school they can in the local area.
And just, Sandra, just before we do take that break, that the campaigns that are underway with regards to that from the Educate Together school, can I just, they're still progressing, there's still
absolutely
meetings taking place, isn't there?
There's the hashtag let our schools grow. The areas are New Ross, Trim, Tuam, Castlebar and Tramore. Yeah. They're the 5 schools, and they're desperately, they want to enrol full classes. The reality is the department are saying it is about buildings, it is about resources, but there are empty school buildings in some of these towns that could be used if there is that collective will to find a solution.
And has there been any further response from the department since?
Well, the department are surveying, they're saying they're surveying the demand in the local area, but those surveys will take a couple of months. Enrolments are happening now, and these schools strongly feel, and rightly so, that they are being discriminated against by being prevented enrolling the children who want to go. And in some cases, these children are siblings of existing children.
Yeah, and my understanding is, I think the minister has indicated that the department is going to review the case of all of the 5 schools to be allowed to expand.
But they're reviewing it. But I mean, the demand is there. Many of the schools need further accommodation anyway, whether they're half a stream or a full stream in September. So really, as John and David have said, it really makes no sense.
Okay, we're just if I can just bring you in, John, just that.
Yeah, very very quickly, thanks, Andrea. It's the wrong way to manage enrolment, and the department is talking out of both sides of its mouth, because on the one hand, the minister wants to have greater plurality and greater pluralism in schools and accommodate choice, but this is something that actually limits choice. And really, if enrolment is to be managed, it should only be managed by agreement between schools at local level.
Okay,
it can't be imposed as a directive.
I just want to ask, the Minister for Education has announced plans that are going to prohibit and stop Catholic primary schools from giving enrolment priority to baptised children in cases where they're oversubscribed. But minority faiths, such as the likes of Church of Ireland, they may continue to prioritise members of their religion in order to protect the ethos in cases where they are oversubscribed. We can't have it every way, really, David Quinn, can we?
Well, I think that the minister would justify that difference, the exemption for the Church of Ireland and Presbyterian schools, etc., on the grounds that the only way they can maintain their ethos as a minority is if the Church of Ireland children are allowed in first, because otherwise you have a situation where Church of Ireland children are getting turned down for Church of Ireland schools if it's first come, first served. It would be a very peculiar situation that Church of Ireland schools couldn't actually serve properly the Church of Ireland community. And they're often in neighbourhoods, in fact they're always in neighbourhoods where the Church of Ireland is in a minority anyway. And so if it's first come, first served, you could have a case where there's actually few enough Church of Ireland children in the local Church of Ireland schools. So I think that's why it's been done. But the admissions policy and the admissions debate, there's something of a kind of red herring at work here, because the admissions policy doesn't become an issue if there's enough school places where there's demand. And where there's not enough school places, some child gets turned down for some reason and the parent will always be unhappy with that reason. So you've got to build enough school places. So Richard Bruton's change to the admissions policy will not provide for a single extra school place. In the schools where there is excess demand for places, he has to create more school places. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. Whether it be Church of Ireland, Educate Together, Catholic, Gaelscoil, whatever, he has to provide enough school places so nobody gets turned down for any reason. And then, you know, going back to the earlier part of our discussion, if there's more school choice anyway, then again, the admissions issue begins to take care of itself.
Okay, but just on that issue where we have schools that are oversubscribed and this, well, effectively, this so-called kind of baptism barrier is going to come into play in Catholic schools, there has to be areas in the country where that is going to be an issue. Because if you look at the rural areas.
The percentage of schools that actually in practice each September have to turn down some pupils is about 3-4%. There was an ESRI study a few years ago that said 20% of schools are oversubscribed. But actually what that means is I could put my child's name down for 5 different schools and every other parent is doing the same thing. And so you end up with this huge oversubscription because people are multiply subscribing to schools. But in practice, come September, you'll find that nearly all of those children have actually found a place in the school. And the percentage of schools that actually in practice have to turn away a pupil nationwide is about 3-4%. And they're concentrated in certain areas, particularly like one black spot for this is the south side of Dublin, where, of course, some of the most influential people in the country live, so they're able to magnify issues of concern to them and make their issues look like national issues. But in fact, the great majority of schools have enough school places.
OK, so you don't see this as being the issue that every... Like, I have to say, I didn't realise it was actually as low as that. Mm. I thought it was a much greater issue.
Well, you see, again, that's because of the kind of magnification effect of Dublin 4, Dublin 6 issues.
Well,
make them look like national issues.
From County Donegal, yeah. So that's where I'm aware of the issue is, yeah, from speaking to my friends that,
yeah,
are at home. Where
but it's still only 3-4% in practice every September have to turn away a pupil. And that should never happen. If there was not a single Catholic school in the country, no school should ever be in a position where it has to turn away a pupil.
Okay, John Walsh, what do you say to that?
Well, I suppose I'm from Blanchardstown, and there was a very serious problem some years ago, mm-hmm, in terms of places being oversubscribed, and it does happen in a very acute form in many areas of Dublin, and the baptism issue when it arises can be extremely divisive within communities. It has wider social consequences, is what I would say, and I think what happened, it caused very serious conflict in Dublin 15 some years ago. And a number of Catholic primary schools, I think, with the advice probably of the Archdiocese, took a progressive approach, mm-hmm, to managing enrolment. They moved away from using baptism as a primary or as a key determinant, and instead they sought to manage enrolment throughout an area. And in fact, there were three schools in the Dublin 15 area, one community national school, 2 Catholic schools, adopted arrangements for managing.
Are there enough school places now, though, in the area?
In that area, well,
getting turned away?
Well, Dublin 15 is an area where there is always huge pressure on school places. Now, I would say there's enough primary school places. There weren't enough post-primary school places. And as a result,
but I mean, how many more school places have been? How many more school places have been built since that controversy? Do you know?
I would say at primary level, there have been a couple of thousand additional,
right,
school places.
But that's the answer.
I think that's part of the answer. Mm. And I agree with you, there aren't enough school places, and also that the minister won't solve any problems unless he delivers more school places. But I think there is a need as well to address policies that are divisive within communities.
Okay, and that's, Sandra, can I just bring you in then perhaps on that point as well? Because obviously John talked about a very specific area of Dublin, but an area where I think a lot of listeners would probably associate there being other options out there and other schools for people too.
In Dublin.
And I suppose in kind of the Blanchardstown area as well.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, there are pockets of Dublin where there is good choice, but as I say, a lot of those are still very heavily oversubscribed. And even if you take the five schools that I mentioned earlier, Trim, Tuam, Castlebar, Tramore, New Ross, they are not urban areas. This is not just a Dublin problem. And there is demand right throughout the country for greater diversity of provision. In Educate Together schools, there is no baptism. There is no producing your baptism certificate to get in. Now, it's not to say that the enrolment in Educate Together schools is sorted. You know, it is on a first come, first serve basis. And that, you know, has its weaknesses as well. But there have been really good solutions implemented. For example, I mentioned the five schools in Lucan area. They have a common enrolment policy with their five schools. So somebody enrolled their child on the common enrolment policies, gives their preference to which school, and then the principals come together and they collectively try and work that out.
This isn't an attempt,
from the Ion Institute.
Yeah. How, I mean, Educate Together schools, how common would it be for the children to come from outside the local area? I mean, I just use an example. So I live on the north side of Dublin, and I think there's a school in around the Kilbarrack area, Educate Together. And I remember speaking to a taxi driver from the locality, and he said he couldn't get his child in because so many parents from outside the area had children in that school. He mentioned children from Clontarf and Raheny. And he was objecting to this because he said, I'm from the local area, I can't get my child in because all these children outside the area are going to the school. I mean, is that the case? Was he correct?
I'm not quite sure. I would imagine that it is they do try and keep a kind of geographical catchment area. And there is work happening on enrolment policies as we speak. But yeah, I think for the most part, I know where I live myself, I see the children going to the local Educate Together school from a mile or two around.
So within kind of the rough catchment.
Yeah, but I mean, people will choose. They will travel to places if that's what they want for their child.
Can I ask you, John Walsh, as well, just the idea of the education admission to schools bill that's going to be enacted later on this year. Just what do you think that's likely to include, or what do you think is likely to be included in that might address some of these issues?
Well, I suppose the admissions bill has been under discussion for about 5 years, both under the previous government and under the current government. It's gone through several different iterations, so it's hard to know what the final shape will be at this stage. But I suppose I would expect them to look at issues like waiting lists, attempting to restrict waiting lists or abolish waiting lists. And to address the issue of admissions itself. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the minister at times has been quite confused in how he's addressed admissions. I think he's been reasonably clear that he doesn't want a baptism barrier, which I can understand, but he's been quite confused about how he's going to achieve that.
And what would you see as being, I suppose, in an ideal world, what would you see as being the best way to deal with that?
I suppose there's no ideal world, but I suppose what I think what is worth looking at are post-primary school enrolment policies. Which I suppose take into account a number of considerations. And it's important that whatever admissions bill comes forward does acknowledge what works within the system as well as what doesn't.
Okay.
So you have, I mean, there's obviously, I'm not speaking for the ETB today, but I'm speaking in a personal capacity, but I know there are ETB schools that have long experience in developing admissions policies that actually work, that, for example, would give priority to, would have a lottery for oversubscription, which is a requirement, would also have provision for siblings within the school for a catchment area, for proximity. So a number of factors. So no one factor dominates.
Okay, can I ask you, David Quinn, the same question just in terms of that education admission to schools bill?
Well, I mean, again, if you build enough school places, you don't have this problem. That's the first thing. If you have enough school places,
you don't
have
this problem. But I suppose we are where we are at the
moment. I do. I mean, I can see the argument in favour of what Richard Bruton is trying to do. But I also see the argument in favour of if a school is set up for a particular purpose and the purpose is to serve the local faith community, Well, then it makes sense that the school is able to give priority in the event of overcrowding to children who belong to that faith community, because that's why the parents set the school up in the first place. So in Britain, for example, about a third of publicly funded primary schools are church-run, mainly Church of England, also Catholic. And they are allowed, in the event of overcrowding, to prioritise members of their own faith community. And that makes sense because that was the founding purpose of the school. It's similarly with Irish language schools. They are allowed, if they want, to prioritise people who come from the Irish language community, because they were set up to promote and perpetuate the Irish language. So this makes sense that the school can fulfil its founding purpose, because equality actually, I mean, it's not the only value. Another value is freedom of association. And freedom of association means like-minded people coming together and setting up organisations that pursue common ends. So the common end could be education in the Irish language, education in a particular faith, or whatever the case may be. And that is a good that has to be respected as well.
OK, can I just even ask you about, we'd say, for instance, the news that we had this week from the Department of Education, particularly in the area of post-primary schools, where it's not about the admission or the getting into the school, but now that while they're in perhaps a denominated type religion school, effectively, maybe a Catholic secondary school, and now the parents don't want the their child to have to go to the religion class.
Yeah,
well, what do you say to that?
Yeah, well, you see, OK, I mean, again, this is solved if we have enough school choice. We don't yet in the present environment. So what do? You have still got to respect the right of the school to be the type of school it was founded to be. So whether it be Church of Ireland or Catholic or Presbyterian or whatever the case may be, it has to have that right. Because otherwise, actually, what you're doing is you're violating the right of the parents who want to send their children to a Catholic or Church of Ireland school and must be allowed to maintain its identity and not move over towards a kind of one-size-fits-all education system, which tends, by the way, not to be popular in the countries that have tried this approach, like the United States, as one of the most radically secular education systems in the world, where absolutely no money goes to religious schools at all, but people are queuing up out the doors where they can afford it to get their children into those schools. And again, Britain, a far more secular society than Ireland, where church attendance is below 8%, and yet a third of schools in England that are publicly funded are church-run and are incredibly popular, people queuing up out the doors to get into them. Mm. And they want them to be religious schools, despite Britain being so secular.
OK, but now, for instance, the parents are going to be able, or the student is going to be able to opt out of that religious class and...
Well, they can anyway. Yeah, like, even in Catholic schools, that can happen.
But even now, the Minister for Education, Richard Bruton, this week has said that extra resources won't actually be offered to the schools in terms
of
having to...
Well, do you know... I contacted the department a few weeks ago to find out how many children get exempted from Irish class in secondary schools. The answer is 10% of the total. 32,000 don't have to learn Irish. And I asked...
And that's for a variety of different reasons.
Yeah, but I asked, what happens when they're not learning Irish? Oh, we don't know. It's up to the school. Okay, so the state, when it comes to all these children not learning Irish, has no concern to make sure that they have some other class that they can go to. It's completely left up to the school. So why do we worry only about those who are not learning religion and the vast numbers not learning Irish?
Just John Walsh, can I bring you in on that point? That, that I suppose, circular, if you like, or whatever you want to call it, from the Department of Education this week, that's going to instruct the state schools to offer alternative subject choices to students who don't want to study religion, but there won't be extra resources offered. What do you say to that?
Yeah, well, I suppose the first thing to say is that the Minister's circular applies at this stage to community post-primary schools and to education training board schools.
So
as you say, so primarily the state sector. Yeah,
just
there isn't
secondary schools.
There isn't
is
from this post-primary schools. There aren't direct implications from this circular for voluntary secondary schools under denominational patronage. But there are implications, say, for community schools in which Catholic denominational providers or Church of Ireland providers would be involved, and for community colleges, which would include both non-designated community colleges, which are already essentially non-denominational, and the designated community colleges, where there are often denominational providers, you know, strongly represented on the board. So I have no difficulty with what the minister is proposing. I think it's perfectly reasonable for the minister to put this in a different form. Over a long period, there has been an established right since, in fact, the 1800s for children to withdraw from religious instruction. So what the minister is requiring is schools to be proactive and to act on that by finding out the preferences of parents in advance.
Yeah.
I think finding out the preferences of parents is positive, but it's ludicrous to put forward something like this without adequate resources.
And it's probably going, that's the problem though, is it not going to be? It's a practicality issue here of how are we going to resource this?
Absolutely. It's a key issue for principals and for teachers that if they are going to provide additional subjects or additional tuition, they need the teachers to do that.
Have schools been provided with extra resources for the 32,000 not learning Irish?
Well, I think
that's a lot of pupils.
I take that one, but it's a slightly different issue. I mean, this goes back to...
Some people don't study Irish for
Can I just come back on that? Can I just come back on that? Sorry to interrupt. It's a slightly different issue because going back to 1831, the Stanley Letter, not to rake up ancient history, but even under the British administration, it was recognised that children had a right to withdraw from religious instruction. So for a long period, there's a de facto right and then eventually later a legal right for children to withdraw from religious instruction, which didn't apply, at least until much more recently, to Irish. So I think the two issues are quite different.
Worry about what the kids are doing.
Absolutely do. But I would say resources is a key issue.
Yeah, I just want to bring you in, Sandra.
Resources must be provided to support the schools if this is being brought forward.
I just want to bring you in, Sandra, on that point as well. From the Educate Together even perspective, just what's your comment on that circular this week?
I think the circular is very welcome because it provides clarity to a situation where a couple of months ago there was another kind of media furore over a situation in an ETB where students were being prevented from studying another subject while they were at the back of the class, of the religion class. And I think this circular provides clarity that the schools actually can't prevent a child from studying something else.
And from the practicality issue that we've been talking about.
Yeah, so I think I'd like to come back on what David was saying about Irish and, there is a fundamental difference between sitting in the back of a classroom whilst there is an instruction going on in a language that you probably don't understand to sitting in the back of a classroom where there is religious instruction, religious formation, religious indoctrination, whatever you would like to call it, going on. And I think we need to be clear about that.
I mean, that is a good point.
There is an issue, I suppose, around the actual teaching of the, I suppose, formation and religious beliefs versus learning about world religions. I mean, they're very different.
And in Educate Together schools, what happens in Educate Together schools in place of religion is what we call the ethical education curriculum, which is about trying to equip students, young people, children and older teenagers, with a moral framework to be able to make ethical decisions about the matters that impact them. And just to say that in terms of resources, Educate Together have a long-standing invitation to any school to use that curriculum. And there's a huge array of resources there. So any school that is thinking about what they can provide for their group of students who don't want to do religion, there is a curriculum there. It is a resourced curriculum.
Okay, just John Walsh, before we take another break, you just wanted to come in on that point as well.
Sure, I think it's very important that children have a moral and ethical framework. That framework is religious where parents want it to be, or it's a non-religious framework. And I think it's important that we don't simply leave a vacuum. I don't think it would be positive if schools are simply expected to provide additional tuition in maths or Irish or English. I think there should be, for example, philosophy is offered in some schools as a very new subject. It's a small minority of schools at the moment, but that's a possibility for those children whose parents don't want them to have religious education, that philosophy could potentially be offered to them. There's a new politics and society module, which has a strong civics dimension, which has been given as a pilot program by the Department of Education. And again, that's something that should be considered. But I do think the department should have, the minister might have offered some of those options or consulted with principals to engage on some of those options.
Parents, by the way, also have a right to exempt their children from those subjects.
They do, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, choice is crucial and the rights of parents are crucial in this context.
Okay. I just want to look at the future of the teaching of religion in Irish schools, where we are today in 2018, and I suppose a kind of a plan really for the next decade. David Quinn, how do you think we can possibly try and change the situation a little bit over the next 10 years?
Well, to go back to the earlier part, again, more school choice and more school places, where there aren't enough school places. But as for, even if you have all of that, all the school choice in the world and all the school places for everybody who wants them in the schools they want, you still have to have a debate about how precisely do you teach religion. So again, going back to Britain, two-thirds of the primary schools there are state-run. They must have an RE programme. Now, the RE programme can take all kinds of different forms, although what it says is it must give a primary place to Christianity, because Britain has been a historically Christian country. So that's what British state schools at the moment have to do. And I think Irish state schools should do something similar, because we are a historically deep-rooted Christian country going back 1,500 years. And it'd be bizarre. Even Richard Dawkins, the arch-atheist, thinks in Britain that children must be in some way acquainted with the Bible, because it's such a foundational text of Western civilization. Okay. So a basic education should include it. But I was just saying during the ad break that the teaching of religion in Ireland has been as big a failure as the teaching of Irish. It's in one ear and out the other. And it's for the same reason, by the way. If you're not hearing the language spoken at home, you're going to find it very hard to pick it up. And if your parents aren't taking religion all that seriously, okay, you're not hearing the language of faith at home either. So, mind you, a lot of subjects are in one ear out the other. But religion, spectacularly so, like Irish.
But David, on that point then, if that's the case, if you think that perhaps in the way it's actually been taught in Irish schools, if it's not enough or sufficient, should we not just leave it to parents then to try
No, because you don't do that with any... If the parent wants a faith school, the school has to make an effort to pass on the faith, but in partnership with the parents. And that's why I think it would be to the benefit of the Catholic Church if there was fewer Catholic schools, because then you might have more committed parents who take the thing seriously, like with the Irish language. Because the Irish language schools have parents who take it all seriously.
What about moving the idea of the RE, the religion class or subject, to perhaps the end of the day, and maybe allow students who want to be there to be there, as opposed to students being made sit there because you have to wait for the bell?
I think a better solution is to reduce the number of Catholic schools in the country, and then they can be more committed Catholic schools. I think that is the better long-term solution, and that satisfies the parents who actually want a Catholic education for their children in a truly Catholic school.
Okay. Could you not do both, though?
I think it's very difficult to do both. I mean, I think at the moment what you have is schools that aren't secular enough to satisfy the secular-minded parents. These are the Catholic schools, and they're not Catholic enough to satisfy the more Catholic-minded parents.
So they're trying to be everyone.
You've got a fudge in the schools at the moment.
Can I bring you in, John Walsh, on that point raised there by David Quinn?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing is that schools need to be properly supported by investment and by training to bring about changes of the kind the minister is proposing. But what I would like to see is a wide range of choice within in programmes within state schools. So I don't personally think faith formation should be offered during the school day in state schools. But I do think there should be a religious...
State schools meaning?
ETB.
Okay.
ETB schools.
Yeah.
But I think it's, you know, there should be a religious education programme of the kind which is approved by the NCCA for those parents who want religious education for their children. But there should also be a philosophy and ethics programme understood in a broad fashion, and drawing upon the philosophical tradition in Western culture,
similar
and work
to what they do in the North in terms of how they teach,
but also similar to philosophy that's already offered in some post-primary schools. There's a school in Bray that offers philosophy. There's a kind of Irish Young Philosophers Award that was launched by President Higgins recently.
And would include, say, for instance, just even learning about the Bible and theology?
I think learning about religions is part of that. I think learning about secular philosophies is certainly part of that. But I think it's also about encouraging critical thinking, encouraging open debate, encouraging a kind of intellectual openness and diversity in schools. And I think that would be a very positive alternative to religious education for those parents who don't want it. I'd also agree with other panelists that we just need more choice in the system. The system is heavily imbalanced at the moment in favour of Catholic patronage schools. That doesn't do the Catholic Church any favours. It doesn't assist with it doesn't also meet the preferences of many parents.
No, and as David mentioned,
so that
as
needs
well,
to be reformed.
There is schools that perhaps aren't Catholic enough for some people, and perhaps aren't meeting the demands of others.
I think
as well.
That was a point made by Dermot Martin, that he would prefer a smaller number of Catholic schools that were more genuinely Catholic.
Okay.
And I think similarly in, you know, but I think going, I suppose going back to the public schools, it's important that state schools offer a wide measure of choice to parents. And I think the, so I think that what the minister is proposing is a step forward, but it has to be properly resourced, okay, and schools have to be properly supported.
Sandra, can I bring you in just from the Educate Together perspective in terms of kind of practical solutions for the next decade? What would you like to see achieved?
I mean, we would like to see the reconfiguration, divestment, whatever you'd like to call it, that scheme really take speed. Mm. But we would also, we have problems with how it's been handled at the moment. At the moment, the ETBs are charged with doing the surveys, the nationwide surveys, and, you know, wouldn't have a problem with that, except they're also going to be competing for some of those schools in terms of the community national school model. So there is there's a bit of a, you know, issue there around how fair it is how open it is. We would love to see an independent agency charged with doing that work.
Okay.
And so then everybody can compete for their particular type of school on the same level. What we'd also like to see is more students and young people's voices being heard. You know, obviously parents have a right within the constitution around the education of their children, but children also have rights as well, and we need to hear what young people actually want as well.
I'm sure there's any parent listening this morning might say, well, if I were to give my child the choice, they'd opt out of plenty of different subjects.
I think, you know, when you speak, I suppose, on a level with young people, young people are very capable of making very good choices for themselves.
Okay.
And, you know, I think we do need to, you know, in an age-appropriate way, give them more agency and autonomy. And just a reminder to people that there is a highly resourced resource bank on the Educate Together website.
Okay.
Our curriculum is available for any school in the country that would like to, and okay, I encourage people to get in touch with
it's them. Been a really interesting conversation this morning. My thanks to our panel today, Sandra Irwin-Garran, Educate Together Education and Support Programme Manager, John Walsh, a lecturer in Higher Education and Education Policy at Trinity College Dublin, and David Quinn from the Iona Institute and columnist with the Sunday Times. My thanks to our production team today, Stephen Jordan, Aidan McKelvey and Marianne Kennedy on sound, and I'll be back again next Sunday morning from 8. But for me, Andrea Gilligan, have a great day.
Between the Lines on News Talk.